Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast, a podcast channel here on the New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkwar, and more importantly, I have the pleasure today of welcoming to the podcast Dr. Shakuntala Gadwe, who is head and assistant professor at the Department of Sanskrit at the University of Mumbai. We'll be speaking about a brand new publication called Narrative Analysis of the Bhagavad Purana, Selected Episodes from the 10th Skanda. Shakuntala, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Professor Raj. Thanks for inviting me in your podcast.
It's our pleasure. Tell us how you got interested. What's the backstory of this book? How did this book come into being?
It's very interesting actually. The real journey of this book started when I presented the paper in World Sanskrit Conference, which was held in Bangkok in 2015. So before that also, actually, I was teaching Bhagavad Purana, Dashama Skanda, to my master's students. And while teaching that unit, particularly from the narratological perspective, I realized that there is no such material which is wholesome, that which can give multidimensional interpretations. Like scholars or spiritual leaders, writers have revealed Bhagavata Purana from their own perspectives. But somewhere that multidimensionality of Bhagavata was not getting revealed. So I got into those depths. I read a lot, of course, the commentary literature as well. And then I realized that Bhagavata is definitely a multi-layered text. Basically, it is narrative literature. It is oral narrative. So it is not like a written text. There are many elements which are added in course of being oral narrative. There are multiple narrators, different levels of narratives like that. So I realized that much can be done in this particular area. And so for the World Sanskrit Conference, I took the topic of narrative of Putana. And the story is known to all, of course. It is also known to even children as a Krishna story, how Krishna triumphed Putana demoness. But when I was reading and going into depths, I realized that Putana is also mentioned in Ayurvedic text as Balagrahi. And there is a section on Balagraha where Putana is mentioned as infantile disease. And there were many narrative signs in Bhagavata Purana as well. She was mentioned again and again as Balagraha. And how, you know, she comes fast in the city. And she fed the milk to the Krishna. And surprisingly, in Ayurvedic text also, it was said that Putana disease spreads with the infected milk. So I could give the scientific interpretation that Putana was infantile disease. But at the same time, I realized that Putana is mentioned as a devotee, one who got liberated. Particularly Bhagavata Purana mentions this whole narrative as Putana Moksha and not Putana Vadha. So what was the reason of this transformation? I pondered upon that Putana Vada gets transformed into Putana Moksha. So I could explore how Putana was a mother, how Putana was devotee, and ultimately how Putana got liberated. So this was a specimen, and I got mesmerized with this, and I considered to take various narratives, particularly from the Dashama Skanda, the 10th Skanda, for my study when Hera's Institute of Indian Culture announced doctoral fellowship. And I took this as a project that I will try to interpret some of the narratives from the 10th Skanda. And this is how the project started. Project got resumed in 2015. It got completed in 2018. And then in collaboration with the Bhaktivedanta Research Center, finally the book got published by the Dev Publishers and Distributors, New Delhi. So this was journey in brief. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing the backstory. You know, I think we should say a word about the approach you take. Many of our listeners may be well aware, and maybe some not so well aware, of the complexity of the Puranas. So these are a sort of, one can think of them almost as patchwork texts with various strata. And, you know, Western scholarship, of course, has struggled for a century and a half until perhaps recent decades to really accord them with, in my view, their true value and their true impact and influence, and to understand that the polyphony, the multivocal and textured nature of these texts, it isn't a bug, it's a feature. But the thing is, how do we study? How do we study texts of multiple authorship, sort of a intergenerational hive-minded play, and what do we do with that? And of course, in my own work, I try to look at sort of synchronic strategies for studying the text. But I want to hear a little bit more, or rather, I want to occasion, I want to provide the listeners with the opportunity to hear a bit more about, what do you mean by narrative analysis? What was that journey like for you? Is it typical, atypical? Like, tell us about that piece.
Yeah, as you rightly said, the Puranas always seems to be like patchwork or something like that, because it lies in its in the nature being the oral narrative. And for a long time, Puranas were not seen from the scholarly perspective also, because of its that nature, that these are the stories, miraculous stories, sometimes considered as illogical also from the surface level. So this comes as a challenge, because when there are stories, the miraculous element is bound to be there. And what happens is, to the reader, how to understand this meaning? Everything is miraculous in the Puranas. So is there any sense? Is there any logic? Because Puranas were not written in systematic manner. They were getting circulated through the oral transmission. They were meant for the masses. So they are using the medium of stories, but Puranas are repositories of culture, religion, history, the social facts, and many more things. But the method of narration was different. They often come in the dialogue form. So the main narrative may be, you know, told, as we know, the traditional author is Vyasa. But of course, Puranas were composed for the long period of time. And so Vyasa, though the traditional author, it makes us think, who was the real author? Who must have composed? They were written or they were composed in certain geographical area. And even those reflections we can get in Puranic literature. So it makes us think about that sacred geography as well. The different narrative levels which are structured by the main narrator, the chief narrator, that is also worth thinking, because though Sutta is telling all these stories, many different narrative levels are introduced. as per the requirement of the stories. Sometimes there is a narrative focus, narrative mood. They are also taken into consideration. So there are various theories, like for example, K. Ayyappa Panikkar has given a certain theory, which can theories or we can say narrative features rather, which can be applied to Indian narrative literature. In that, for example, there is cyclicalization, that Indian narratives are cyclic and not linear. And this again, you know, is very much, Puranas are very much befitting in this particular feature, because Puranic stories are not linear. Sometimes there are embedded narratives. They go in cyclic manner. They keep, you know, like unending. Like, for example, there are exploits of various demons by Lord Krishna. In that, we can see that earlier text may be mentioning few names of the demons, but that is increasing in the later text. So somewhere it is that cyclic element, that whenever there will be evil, Krishna, Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu will definitely destroy that. This is a cyclic feature. There is allegorization. Metaphorical stories are there, like Rasa Panchadhyayi or Gopi Chiraharanam. That if common reader reads those portions, narratives from the Bhagavata Purana, one may censor those as they are vulgar stories, because they are just taking the superficial meaning. So we have to understand the inner layers of those meanings. So interiorization takes a very important role in understanding the Puranic narratives. We don't have to rely only just on the superficial meaning, but we have to go into the depths. Symbolism or allegorization makes, you know, important place. Similarly, like Ayyappa Panikkar, we have Western theories as well. Like Rula Barth has given his narrative model. Gennett has given the narrative model. Then Levi-Strauss, there is a theory called structuralism. Again, it plays very important role, because Bhagavata Purana has a precursor. Those narratives are narrated previously by Harivamsa, by Vishnu Purana. And again, those Bhagavata stories are re-narrated in Brahma Vaivarta and further text as well. Though these texts are told, retold and depicted in various manners, in arts as well, always they are not the same, because the context differs. So the concept, context, context set by the Bhagavata Purana is different. And accordingly, the narratives are also reshaped. So the same narratives from the Harivamsa and Vishnu Purana are getting different and unique context in Bhagavata Purana, that we can see. So in the there is always another feature we can see, which is as frame narrative, or we can say tell about a tell. So in Bhagavata Purana, we see Bhagavata Mahatmya. Of course, it is added later, but it tries to provide, that Bhagavata Mahatmya tries to provide the frame narrative for the entire Bhagavata, that Bhagavata is to be read as per the bhakti perspective, or as according to the bhakti perspective. This is about bhakti. This is about the Bhagavat Mahatmya, glory of the Lord. So this is set. Even if we see Dashamaskandha, the first narrative, that is birth of child Krishna, sets that framework for entire Dashamaskandha. Because when the child Krishna is born, he is seen with all those features of Vishnu. That is, he is with the Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, which makes the affirmation that he's not ordinary child, but incarnation of Vishnu. So this sets the framework. So this is a tell about tell, which is very important feature, and this is very common with all the Puranic narratives. It often comes with the Phalashruti. So Phalashruti is a very important technique which is used by Puranas, because it makes the listeners to get indulged into those narratives. So such narrative techniques we can see, which are used by narrators in the Puranas, and they need to be decoded. They need to be decoded. They need to be interpreted. If not done like that, then we may not understand Puranas at all.
Yes, indeed. I couldn't agree more. I mean, there are a number of podcasts of monographs and volumes that are covered on the channel and across Indic religions or Hindu studies, there are a variety of types of projects. It just so happens that I also study Puranas. And your approach quite resonates because it's not, there's method in the madness. There's profound method in the madness of the ways in which these texts have been crafted and received and innovated and renovated. There's profound method to the madness. A simple thing is, why does the Devi Mahatmya exist within the Markandeya Purana?
Exactly.
Sure. The idea of interpolation, it may be technically true, but it's a biased method. It's a biased method of receiving or viewing or thinking about, you know, as if it doesn't belong there. It belongs there. It belongs nowhere else. And indeed, the Devi Mahatmya, for the last 15 centuries, to our knowledge, exists nowhere else, to the point that even in the liturgical life, they chant Markandeya Vacha as part of the ritual. Like, it's only in the mouth of Markandeya that we see this text. And this is crucial. There's a reason for this.
Right, right.
And so, you know, understanding this is what we're doing now in this generation of scholarship. We're taking seriously the Purana.
Yeah.
Now, it's not whether it's important, but it's why this is important. Why is this narrative motif important? Why is this frame story important? And I think it's great to map out, as you have, narrative structures such as, you know, cyclical vertical structures and et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to get too nerdy into the narratology, but it's useful. And I think not only can Western narratology illumine or support our study of the Puranas, but vice versa. In terms of, I think, Puranic lore and interpretation, I think there's a whole new level of reader response theory that can be generated from this sort of frames within frames narratives. And I think it's a very fruitful line of inquiry. Now, more about the substantive content of your book. What is it that you hope to show or argue? What do you hope that the reader comes away with from the book? What is it, the gist of the book's aim?
It comes with the gist as the Bhagavata Purana presents, bhakti is definitely the thread which is undercurrent, we can say. Bhakti is all-pervading principle of the Bhagavata, definitely. That cannot be denied at all. But there are other threads also, like I have highlighted in my certain chapters, assimilation and acculturation. Because many threads of assimilation can be seen, that Krishna Sampradaya has assimilated many other Sampradayas. For example, we have the narrative of Govardhana Puja. So in Govardhana Puja narrative, Govardhana, uplifting of Govardhana mountain, that narrative is there. And in that, all gopas and gopis have offered food as a naivedya to the mountain god. So after that, Krishna appears and consumes that food and says that, Shailosmi, I am that mountain. So here, this particular is that Shailosmi is the clear-cut sign to show that how the Krishna Sampradaya has identified with the mountain god. It seems that mountain god must be the local god of the Braja people. It must be the folk god of the Braja people. But Krishna has identified with that god. We can say Krishna Sampradaya assimilated. And in turn, Govardhana worship also became the part of Vaishnavism. So this is acculturation. So such thread is definitely visible. In the same narrative, we can see there is a strife between Krishna and Indra worshippers also. And ultimately, Krishna wins. So Bhagavata Dharma is becoming supreme and it is assimilating all other sampradayas. That is clearly visible. Same we can see in another narrative, which is uprooting of Arjuna trees. So, of course, there are again various interpretation of this particular narrative. But Maharashtrian scholar R.C. Dhere has highlighted one point, and which is very much relevant here, that yakshas were worshipped in the form of trees. So yaksha worship was very prevalent in that particular period. So here Krishna also kind of, we can say, assimilated that Krishna worship is supreme. And so worship of other gods may be there, but Krishna worship is supreme. So Bhagavat, the formation of Bhagavata Dharma, we can understand through this text. So it gives us understanding of socio-cultural history, definitely. So this is one thread. As I said, exploits of demons, like Putana is killed, or many other demons are there. But again, you know, there is one thread that is Vidvesha Bhakti, which is very common in all the Puranas, that Puranas are talking about this kind of bhakti, not other text, that even the enemy get liberation, how this is possible. So somewhere this is a psychological understanding that you are thinking, you know, about the enemy, so much so that it happens like a meditation. And so there is a liberation to the enemy also. But what is the message for the common people? That if even if enemy gets liberated, then what about you? If you are doing the Shravana, Kirtana of the Lord, definitely there is a liberation. So this thread is also there in that exploits of demon. But there are others also. Like there are different animals which are mentioned, particularly in those exploits. So each animal has a particular peculiarity, the psychological trait. And that psychological trait seems to be highlighted in those narratives. We can see again the narrative of expulsion of Kaliya, Kaliya Mardana Katha we have. In same, again, we can see this motif of assimilation, because Naga clan is assimilated. Defeated, and again Bhagavata Dharma is proved to be supreme over the Naga worshippers or even the Yaksha worshippers, etc. And then some definitely are totally, we can say, bhakti narratives, because they are very, very allegorical, too allegorical, or symbolism works there. Like, for example, Rasa Panchadhyayi Vinu. Gopi Chiraharanam we can know, Rukmini Swayamvara we can know. So here we can see that if they are not interpreted properly, then definitely people will be misled. And people, even today we can see that, always say that, what is Rasa Panchadhyayi? People do not understand the spiritual meaning of it. But there are certain narrative signs in Rasa Panchadhyayi, like the mention of Yoga Maya, or certain epithets which are given to Krishna, like Atma Rama he is called as, or Yogeshwara. That is a clear indication. Those narrative signs indicate that here the narrator is not talking about the Krishna as an ordinary human or ordinary person, but he is a lord, and gopis are also not the ordinary ladies. So even the question is asked by those narrators here, whether, you know, it is accordance with the dharma or not. So such questions are solved. So for readers, it is definitely a takeaway that Puranas are to be studied from this multiple approaches, like sociological approaches there. We can understand the social history, definitely not chronology, but social history. We can understand different phases of the formation of particular religion and culture. We can understand those stages. We can then understand the philosophical developments also. Because when we see Bhagavata, we can see different philosophical streams are synthesized. So this synthesis is very important to be understood. We can see the reflections of the Sankhya philosophy. We can see Advaita Vedanta. But we can also see that it is amalgamation of the Saguna Brahma, Nirguna Brahma philosophy. So the understanding this synthesis is very important. Understanding the principle that Puranas were of assimilative nature, they were trying to synthesize everything. As we see, the concept of Trinity also is there. Trimurti is there in Puranas. It got developed in Puranic literature. So similarly, in Bhagavata Purana, we can find this synthesis. Synthesis is definitely the thread, the harmony of those religious ideas, philosophical ideas, which were present. They are trying to harmonize. So I think this is the takeaway for the readers or even the scholars, even the general readers, I will say, because they should not stop just by listening the stories, but go into those details, I feel.
Lovely. One of the strengths of this work, in my view, is that various different methods and approaches are taken, because the Puranas invite us to adopt different methodologies, because in moments really sociological analysis is warranted. In other moments, maybe even psycho-spiritual or philosophical, etc. So it's great that, you know, for example, when I strive to develop methods for synchronic reading, and to take seriously the text as we have it, because in some sense, this is the latest software of tradition. It's the latest version of the software. This is where tradition has left off with innovating this text. But nevertheless, it's not as if we are daft enough to think these aren't diachronically produced and they're not products of history and culture, and in your words, assimilation or sort of sociocultural threads. And so it's great to through one eye look at the narrative and the structures of the stories and see what the compositional strategies are inviting us, how they're inviting us to interpret, right? The exegetical influence they're hoping to influence to exert on the readership by how they're structured. And on the other hand, we look at the text as layers through time. So I say, you know, the archaeological dig is important, but first pay attention to the city as it is, or the temple. First pay attention to the structure as it is. Then go ahead and knock it down and do the dig and see what comes where, and, you know, which, you know, the diachronic perspective. So I like the fact that you bring them together in your work.
Definitely.
Yeah, was there anything else about the book that you wanted to mention? And also, feel free to mention if there's anything else you're working on or what next for you.
So, as I already told, I was very much mesmerized when I look at the Putana narrative and analyze certain narratives in this way. So this is like now framework. I think whole Bhagavata can be analyzed from this particular perspective, right from the first Skandha, because there are many such embedded narratives, and we can draw out such social, philosophical, religious, and spiritual principles from reading, and we can understand the depth of the Bhagavata. We can explore many such layers. And even this framework can be applied for other narrative texts, other Puranic texts as well, as you rightly said, Devi Mahatmya, or any other text, definitely. So what I would like to say is here, this is just a precursor or some glimpse that how Bhagavata or Puranic literature can be studied from the perspective of narratology. But there is much scope to do ahead for other scholars as well. So this is open to scholarly fraternity, of course.
Lovely. I'm sure there are a number of scholars, from what I understand, a number of our colleagues listen to the podcast. Yeah. And certainly a number of them are interested in the Puranas. I'm currently trying to put together a website that maps Puranic studies, that maps recent work and current scholars, because it's a website I wish I had when I began Puranic studies, where at a glance you can see who's working on what manuscripts do we have where, what's been critically edited, and it's vast. So I'm sure we'll continue conversation as part of the scholarly community. Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
I think you asked about some next thing also.
Yeah, please, if you like.
Yeah. After this, I was working on one edited book, Bhakti in Vaishnava Traditions, and that is published just 2 days back. So maybe, we can
congratulations.
Talk about that book later. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'll certainly have you back on. You and or your co-editor, whatever works scheduling-wise temperament-wise.
Edited by me and Ferdinando Sardella, and that is recently published. So I will send the details to you.
Excellent. We'll have you back to discuss that. That's exciting. It's great to see the blossoming of Purana studies. It really has been blossoming in recent years, hasn't it? It's wonderful. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
Thank you.
For those listening, of course, we've been talking about narrative analysis of the Bhagavat Purana with Dr. Shakuntala Gawde of University of Mumbai. Until next time, keep listening, keep reading, and keep contemplating the power of narrative and ways in which we can analyze it. Take care.